Now, it's pretty clear where supersymmetry has progressed on Joe's description of the eventual progression of theories. So let me remind you that it may be trivial, but it's still a good thing, and it's still what a large number of physicists are expecting to find at LHC. And because it's also a hierarchy problem, because there is evidence right now, experimental evidence for unification of gauge forces with supersymmetry, and because a consistent theory of quantum gravity seems to require supersymmetry. And of course, we've heard a lot about how new dimensions can also be good for all of the above, although this may also require supersymmetry and the very active imaginations of a lot of people who are in this room. But, and they can even do one thing that I didn't know how to do before, that is they give unique framework for really understanding an effective theory why parameters which are technically natural to have them small but not guaranteed to be small by any symmetry might actually not be there. And this has already been exploited by Arkani, Hamed, and Schmaltz to explain small Yukawa couplings without symmetries. And in a paper that's a year old now, also by Randall and Sundrum, but not with any extra-dimensional solution to the hierarchy problem, they showed how this could be used to suppress flavor violation in the supersymmetry breaking parameters without symmetries. And to get these unique features, you don't actually need a large dimension, but something on the order of 10 or 20 times the fundamental inverse scale would do. So if I don't want to work as hard as some of the people in this room, I can still sort of have it all. I can have supersymmetry and a small large extra dimension, and with a few very simple assumptions, solve very many problems. The hierarchy problem, have grand unification, the supersymmetric flavor and CP problems, even still the mu problem, and a problem that the MSSM had of way too many free parameters. I think before we had the neutrino masses, it had 120 something, I don't remember anymore. And I think the large extra-dimensional scenarios so far still have this problem as well. Okay. So let me remind you about this old paper of Randall and Sundrum, which I guess has also progressed down towards the trivial end of this hierarchy. That is the idea that you could solve the supersymmetric flavor problem in a very natural way. That is, you could insulate the supersymmetry breaking parameters from the physics of flavor by putting the supersymmetry breaking sector on a separate brain and making sure that the only thing you had that could communicate between these two brains that was light compared to the compactification scale was supergravity. And this is a very exciting scenario, and I heard Lisa talk about it, and she said at the time that the only reason why one shouldn't necessarily believe that this theory was right was because it predicts negative Slepman masses squared. And of course, I mean, most people were somewhat less excited about it than they would have otherwise been because of that. Otherwise, I think she's right, this would be the standard model. But various suggestions have been explored for fixing this problem. One possibility is to have other fields in the bulk besides supergravity. And once you do that, you now have to go back to understanding how you preserve the flavor universality of the Skvorkian Slepman masses. And so people have tried various things in the bulk, such as new gauge symmetries. But I think very natural candidates for things to have in the bulk, which we know are going to preserve these symmetries, are the gauge and Higgs bosons themselves. And this was dismissed in the paper of Randall and Sundrum because they said that the couplings of fields that are in the bulk would be suppressed by a factor of the volume of the bulk. But in fact, since we don't actually need a very large extra dimension, I think this is perfectly okay. Okay, so now I'll go back to effective field theory in 3 plus 1 ordinary non-compact dimensions and some additional compact dimensions, and I'm not going to worry about curvature effects or anything like that, so I'm just going to write down ordinary effective field theories and assume that there's a cutoff and that any terms that connect fields that are localized on different brains are exponentially suppressed by factors of the exponent of the fundamental scale times the distance between brains. And so the Lagrangian then is just some bulk Lagrangian and various possible brains and various brain Lagrangians. And because I'm ignorant of the physics above the cutoff, I'm just going to construct this Lagrangian using dimensional analysis, but I'm actually going to be a little bit more sophisticated and use naive dimensional analysis. That is, I'm going to actually keep track of loop factors and assume that there's some factor relating the loop and tree factors, which we'll just call epsilon at the scale m. So let me go back and talk a little bit about how you can go two-dimensional analysis, but a little bit more naively than is usually done, that is keeping track of the expected strength of various couplings in your effective theory, taking into account of pi's that come about from the dimensionality of space-time. And so it's very simple. You basically say that everything depends on some function of dimensionful parameters over whatever your fundamental scale is with a coupling constant out front. And it's convenient to write this coupling constant out front as a typical loop factor over the typical suppression factor of loops to tree diagrams, which is just this factor which has these twos and pi's in it, and it's 16 pi squared in four dimensions. So let me just remind you of how this would be done in four dimensions. For instance, if you wanted to estimate the four Fermi coupling you would generate from physics at a scale m that was characterized by a strength g squared over 16 pi squared, that is the typical loop factor, you would get g squared over n squared, which is, of course, what you do get if you construct the four Fermi theory from the standard model. And if this was a truly strongly coupled theory, that is where loops were as important as tree diagrams, you would get 16 pi squared over n squared. And this is unfortunately not the convention usually used by experimentalists in discussing searches for strong interactions through four fermion contact terms. So whereas they only claim to have probed compositeness up to 10 TeV, they've actually done a factor of root 4 pi better than that, up to 30 TeV. Okay, so if you want to figure out how big you can make these extra dimensions while still keeping the standard model couplings of order one, then you get various bounds on the size of extra dimensions. So this is assuming you have compactified on a torus. And for five dimensions, for instance, the extra dimension could be 700 times the fundamental scale, which would give you a suppression factor for a possible suppression factor for the connection between the brains of 10 to the minus 162. So there's plenty of room even to put the standard model in the bulk, especially if you stick to five or six dimensions. But even you could even go up to 11 dimensions, provided you're willing to make the theory really, truly strongly coupled at the cutoff. Okay, so then, so now with a simple setup, it's very trivial to compute the soft supersymmetry breaking terms in our world. There are many sources. The Squark and Slepton masses squared come out finite. They are not sensitive to physics above the cutoff because of the fact, as Marcus Luddy emphasized in his talk, that they are on a different brain from the supersymmetry breaking sector. This is not true for the Gugino mass or the mu parameter, however. So those we will just estimate using dimensional analysis. And so then we want to go back, since we're actually talking about masses, to make sure the fields are canonically normalized. Yes? The quarks and leptons are on a brain still, yes. I'm sorry, I should have. So this is essentially the same setup of anomaly mediation or the sequestered sector that Marcus Luddy talked about, the quarks and leptons. The only difference is the standard model, gauge fields, and Higgs fields are in the bulk. And so with the gauge fields in the bulk, in fact, you can, at tree level, generate a Gugino mass. And with the Higgs fields in the bulk, you can, at tree level, generate a mu term, even if it was absent originally for some reason. And you estimate how big they are, and they come out comparable to the Gravitino mass. Yes? Okay. Chiral superfields are on brain. Yes. And there's a hit. Yes. I could imagine either, I think. I could certainly have them on brain in some models. Yeah. Well, yes, that's a working hypothesis. Okay. I certainly need the chiral superfields to be on the brain, I think, in this setup. I don't know how to propagate them in extra dimensions. And everything else, I think, it's right now, with limited knowledge from the bottom up, free choice. Yes. Yes. But they're not necessary, right. The standard model gauge fields are, the gauge boson masses are protected by gauge invariance. I'm not breaking that. Bulk is tiny. I mean, from our effective theory point of view, that once you've been below the compactification scale, which let's say is 10 to the 16 JeV, you can forget about the extra dimensions. Yeah, if you really want to look at it from a very short distance point of view, it's in the bulk. Okay. So the result was that the Gugino mass and the mu term are generated at tree level, and they're only somewhat suppressed compared to the Gravitino mass, suppressed by the fundamental scale that generated these couplings over the actual point scale. And then we have the Higgses in the bulk, we have the additional terms, which generate the DMU parameter in the Higgs masses, also occurring at tree level. And again, doing the same dimensional analysis point of view, you get a result that they're on the order of a gravitational mass. And so this is not necessarily a disaster, again, so long as the extra dimension is not too big. But as was pointed out in the other paper, the theory, the type of situation with the Higgs and the ball does have a new problem in the sense that the BMU term, the supersymmetry breaking Higgs mass square term, is parametrically larger than the supersymmetric, apparently supersymmetric Higgs mass term. By a factor of, let's say, if this fundamental scale was the scale of higher dimensions of gravity, it would be bigger by a factor of n times over that scale. And so if we want to restrict ourselves to extra dimensions that are large compared to the fundamental scale by a factor of 20, so we can solve the flavor problem, this is at least 3.4, say. And so there are several ways of approaching this problem. The other group decided to treat this as a problem and try and build models to fix it, i.e. to keep the Higgs on our brain and then try and generate the new term in another way. But I think we can just ignore the problem. That is, in some sense, there is a fine-tuning associated with the fact that these parameters are somewhat heavier than the gauge genome mass. But if you restrict yourself to somewhat small extra dimensions, somewhat heavier is a factor of 3 or 4, and I'm willing to simply not treat that as a problem. If you quantify the fine-tuning associated with the natural scale of these parameters compared with the fine-tuning electroweak symmetry breaking compared with the Guarino mass, this is actually causes less fine-tuning problems than the Guarino mass itself. So what about the spork and slip cone masses? There's no counterterm for them. Yes. So they could be computed, and they are down by a loop factor compared to the gauge genome mass. So if we take this compactification scale to be very large, and we do take it to be the grand unified scale, then we have to run down from 10 to the 16 JeV to the weak scale. And this running is essentially what generates the soft supersymmetry breaking masses for the quarks and leptons, which is why we call this gauge genome mediated supersymmetry breaking, because the dominant term in the running is the gauge genome mass, and it generates a positive mass flow. And this is somewhat similar to the no-scale supergravity model spectrum, except that with the Higgses in the bulk, the Higgs masses are not set to zero. They are free input parameters. And also, there's no reason to take these equal to each other, and therefore the running does generate a phi Leopoldov term for hypercharge, which affects the spectrum. I advertise this as solving all the naturalness problems introduced by supersymmetry. Remind you what the supersymmetric CP problem is. This is the problem that in supersymmetric models, at one loop, one generates electric dipole moments. There are very stringent limits on the electric dipole moment of the neutron and the electron. In particular, in this theory, a relative phase could appear between the BMU parameter, the supersymmetry breaking Higgs Higgsino mass parameter and the mu parameter. If you fix the gauge genome masses to be real, so you don't allow an R transformation, this is a physically observable CP violating parameter, which has to be less than 10 to the minus 2. And this is a problem because there's no symmetry which prevents these terms from having CP violating coefficients, since CP has to be violated in the standard model. However, it's quite natural once you segregate the supersymmetry breaking sector from the standard model sector, to just have CP violation in our world and not in the bulk and not in the supersymmetry breaking spectrum. And then there is no supersymmetric CP problem. Okay, the phenomenology can pretty much be summarized by the last 20 years or so of work on the MSSM, because the low energy phenomenology is just the phenomenology of the MSSM, except with these six input parameters. We don't have to input any scalar mass for the first two generations, and we have reason not to. And two of these input parameters are fixed by the measured values of the top mass and the weak gauge on that, weak gauge boson masses, and you're left with four. And so it's very easy to check that you can find parameters which work and give you a viable supersymmetric particle spectrum. The fleptons come out fairly light, but the LSP is typically the Beano, assuming you start running at the gut scale. So for instance, if you start with input parameters, fundamental supersymmetry breaking scale around 200 JeV, the right-handed flepton and the lightest neutralino are the lightest supersymmetric particles with masses perhaps within range very soon. The squarks and the gluinos are out of range until the LHC. They are generated by running. Yes? They can be fudged. You just change the parameters a little bit. Okay. You didn't worry too much about the Higgs. You can get any Higgs within the usual range that the MSSM allows the Higgs to be in. So the conclusion is that one unique thing you can do with new dimensions is that without invoking any new symmetries, you can segregate the flavor symmetry breaking and the CP violating and the supersymmetry breaking sectors, and therefore hide flavor symmetry breaking from the supersymmetry breaking parameters. And provided you allow the standard model gauge fields and Higgs fields to live in the bulk, you get a very predictive set of boundary conditions for the MSSM, and these are even good boundary conditions. So with just one set of simple assumptions, you eliminate 100 free parameters and a large number of problems. Okay, but before I would be willing to say this was the most attractive scenario around, I have a couple of things I would need to see. That is, I would like to understand where the Yukawa coupling hierarchy comes from in this context. This has to be addressed now above the compactification scale, so that otherwise these soft masses will learn about flavor breaking again. And I would like to actually see a supersymmetric grand unified theory that I could stand to look at for more than a day that explained the splitting of the Higgs doublets and triplets. And I'd like to understand why we don't have proton decay in supersymmetric theories. That's all. I don't want excessive proton decay. I'm willing to have proton. Yes, okay, that's exactly the kind of thing I'm interested in, yes. Yes. I don't think it predicts anything, but about that, as far as I know. But that's not a Grand Unified Theory. Well, I know you told me that they're on a single fat brain. Okay. But does that give enough suppression for the Dimension 5 operators? Well, I'm worried, once I have such large exponentials around, I'm not going to suppress the Yukawa couplings too much. I know. I don't have to, but I have to understand now it starts looking fine-tuned that I have the quarks at exactly the same place, so the Yukawa couplings are not so small. Okay. Okay. Yes.